Good afternoon, everyone. A quorum being present, I will go ahead and convene this meeting of the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is February 18th. This meeting was originally scheduled at 3 p.m., but was rescheduled for reasons that are too tedious to go into. And Ms. Deister, we're now on short notice for all meetings and actions.
I believe that will be official tomorrow, at least on the Senate side.
Okay.
So.
I think that there may have been some confusing information dispersed that we do not have a committee meeting tomorrow afternoon, but we will likely have a long meeting on Tuesday. So our meeting begins at 3 o'clock, and we could go into the dinner hour, so I'm just going to put everybody on notice that Co-Chair Johnson will wield her gavel effectively and efficiently.
So heavy on the efficient.
And I will endeavor to do the same tonight. I am going to go ahead and open a work session on two items, the Department of Veterans Affairs Rural Transportation Grant Expenditure Limitation, and also the OLCC Marijuana Regulatory Program Fee Ratification. We'll take those one at a time. Ms. Deister, can we start with the Veterans Affairs request?
Absolutely. Co-chairs, members of the committee, what you have before you is a recommendation to increase federal funds expenditure limitation for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs by $100,000 federal funds for the supplemental grant that is likely to be available for Lake and Harney counties. I am not aware that the final yes, we got it grant notification has been given to ODVA, but the recommendation from the Legislative Fiscal Office is to unschedule that limitation until we get that notification. This way we can get it in their budget and they'll be able to spend it as soon as they get notice.
Excellent. Yes, Senator.
Mr. Chair, move approval.
I'm just kidding.
I'm trying to move it along.
I second it.
caught me a little bit off guard,
I'm
Senator.
I'm sorry.
But to hold that thought for just a second, I want to welcome Director Smith to the table. Director, we welcome you. We're anxious to hear from you. We want to hear everything you have to say, and the faster you say it, the more money you'll get.
Co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and we've been before you many times on this subject, and happy to be adding in both Harney and Lake County to this potential grant. We have submitted the grant up to the federal VA, and within a matter of weeks should hear back. But all signals point positive at this point, so we appreciate the expenditure limitation.
Very good. Ms. Deister, is there a recommendation?
The recommendation is to include an increase of $100,000 of additional federal funds expenditure limitation over and above the $399,999 that you've already put in the omnibus budget reconciliation bill for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs for this particular grant opportunity, and with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule the additional expenditure limitation until notice of the grant award is received by ODVA.
Any further recommendations?
Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, for the record, Dustin Ball, the Chief Financial Office, and we would support the LFO recommendation.
All right, Senator Hansel, what is it you said a minute ago?
I move approval.
All right. Thank you so much.
That's appropriate.
colleagues, you have heard the reports. You have heard the recommendations. You have heard the motion. Are there any questions, any comments, any objections? If not, I will declare the measure passed. Do we need a carrier for this, Ms. Deister?
Yes, you will.
And
I would sort of recommend the good representative from one of the counties that is receiving.
Representative Whitson, would you like to take this one?
I would, thank you.
All right, we all set?
Okay.
Ms. Deister, anything further on this item?
Not on that item, no,
all right,
sir.
Well, I'm going to invite the people at the front table to
thank
switch
you
out, and you can introduce the Marijuana Regulatory Program Fee Ratification.
Yes, sir. Would you go ahead and gavel that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I had gaveled both work sessions, but I'll be happy to.
Okay. Just so we can be on the safe side here. Okay. Before you next is a work session for the ratification of marijuana regulatory program fees. These are fees that have been administratively implemented by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to implement the recreational marijuana system pursuant to the bills, House Bill 3400 and House Bill 2041, that passed during the 2015 legislative session. Those bills indicated that OLCC needed to recover their program costs for their program, and they have endeavored to set their fees accordingly. Their process, which I'm sure they'll tell you more about, included work groups to help determine the fee amounts as well as to calculate the amounts that would be needed to recover those costs. So that's by way of introduction.
All right, thank you. Welcome, there. Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Steve Marks, Executive Director of OLCC. With me is Bill Schutte, our economist at OLCC. Chairman Patridge would have been with you earlier today. He was in town and planned to present with here, but he was relieved to head south earlier, so he's heading back to Medford. Bill's going to present the fees with you. You know, we have a new program. We had many challenges in terms of projecting, you know, the number of actual applicants we get, the number of applications. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bill for the presentation about how we set our fees and what we did.
Thank you, and welcome.
Chair, committee, for the record, Bill Schutte, economist with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I have about 50 slides, but I'll only go through one or two here. So just as a setup for how the fees for marijuana were set, they were set in statute by House Bill 3400 last session, which mandated the OLCC to set the fees based on rule and not administer the fees based on the administration cost of the program. So as the summary is, we need to set the fees to recover the program costs but not exceed the cost of administration. We need to set individual fees for each license type, and there were several budget notes, and one included tier the fees for all license types, and the fees must be less than those charged by OHA. At the time, we didn't exactly were sure what the fees were going to be charged by OHA, but we do know now that they are $4,000. So our $5,000 fee, which is the application fee plus the annual license fee, are fulfill that requirement. We established our fees via temporary rules based on estimates from Colorado and Washington experience. We adjusted downward for population and upward for Oregon's medical marijuana retail outlets. All license types, and this was the original initiative, had a $250 application fee. We kept that in there. We were required to tier the grower fees, so we have two tiers of grower fees, $3,750. Was estimated for the small growers and $5,750 for large growers, and all other license types. In the absence of information, we assigned an annual fee of $4,750. There were a total of 19 fees we had to establish, which included stuff like packaging approval fees and a marijuana handler's permit. Issues were raised with the advisory groups that were met to review these fees. What they were higher than the Measure 91 fees that were set at $1,000, but we do have to recover the cost of our program. Our current budget this biennium is $8.3 million. We've estimated approximately 850 licenses in the system, and if you do the math, that's how you come up with about $5,000 per licensee. I'll go just briefly over the setting process, fee setting process. You'll see a lot of estimate in here, and I guess that's really the basis of our message, is that we will be back for this. These are estimates for what we think the number of licenses are going to be and what the regulatory and licensing resources will be needed to administer these licensees. Process for existing fees is done by rule. We presented the current fee schedule, which is in your packet. By temporary rules, they should be done in permanent rules by the end of this, about end of June of this year. And then we get into another process, almost an iterative process, that as we get into our budget setting, that we will have to relook at the fees almost every biennium, and that's what we expect to do. And I guess with that, I will close and accept any questions.
Any questions?
Yeah.
Senator Johnson, please.
Thank you. I just would like your comment on your ability to maintain any degree of balance in your advisory committee meetings. I know in the early iterations of the implementation of the ballot measure, there were some questions raised about how balanced the committees were, whether or not you had people with pecuniary interests serving on any of the committees. And if you could comment for the record about how you have managed that conundrum, I would appreciate it.
I'm Chair Steve Marks. So The committee, our main advisory committee, and the one required by rules, the RAC committee, that's a broad-based committee. It includes both public members from cities, counties, law enforcement, local and county law enforcement, and then it does include industry members from the marijuana industries as well as representative of the general public.
Follow up?
Yes, please. So when you're talking about fee setting, where some of the members of your advisory committee may have a conflict, how are you dealing with that?
The commission resolved, the recommendations went from the RAC to the commission. The commission actually took action on the rule.
Okay. Steve, you're just begging me to ask another question. Do you have any process to disclose conflict at your advisory level? Is it on the record? Are you required, or are those people fully able to participate in the deliberations on the idea that the commission absolves them of the disclosure of any conflict?
Senator Johnson, I don't believe, and you can correct me if we have a flaw in the process, we'll gladly correct it. But because they're advisory and not taking final action, that they we didn't have them declare conflicts along the way.
Okay, well, in an administration that has staked out transparency as one of their goals, I think probably you're on the right side of the line legally, but for the perception, having people who are directly impacted by the establishment of certain levels of fees actively participating and perhaps rendering an opinion, some of us find wanting in terms of complete transparency.
Senator Johnson, to the extent, and I had to address this issue along the way across the spectrum with our policies on marijuana. Ultimately, it's the commission that balances the public interest and takes the public action. And I think that's an important part of the process, and I've not only had to talk about the importance of that to many constituencies, not just public officials along the way.
Okay. Representative Dearman.
Thank you, Chair Gomberg. Can you go back to slide number two? This just was the second slide that you showed, or I guess the first slide that you really showed. Yeah, that one there. So at the very bottom there is issues raised. Detailed cost accounting of for each license type is time-consuming and problematic. Can you put some flesh on that for me?
Co-chairs, Representative Nerwin, the Senate House Bill 3400 requires the commission to account for each license type and the regulatory costs for each license type. There are some bills currently in the legislature that are going through that will allow us to move from each license type to the program. So we expect to manage the program as a whole, a zero-sum game, so that we spend whatever the cost is, that's what we collect in fee revenues, versus by each license type.
So that's the cost to the agency?
The cost to the agency,
okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Ms. Dyster.
Okay. I would just add that the specific fee schedule for each type of fee that you're being asked to ratify is attached to the LFO recommendation in the meeting materials. So you can see the 19, I believe it was, that was referenced here. And note that, as Mr. Schutte mentioned, that these licensing fees are expected to generate about $5.9 million in the current biennium. So the difference between the fee revenue that's realized and the current biennium expenses because of startup costs from the previous biennium, et cetera, will be basically addressed through a transfer of marijuana tax revenue to make the liquor fund whole. The liquor fund fronted a lot of the startup costs for this marijuana regulatory program. So with that, the LFO recommendation is that the proposed fees be ratified and recommended for inclusion in the fee ratification bill.
Thank you. Any further recommendations?
Again, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, for the record, Dustin Ball with the Chief Financial Office, and we would support the LFO recommendation and recommend that you approve the request.
Thank you so much. Colleagues, you have heard the reports and the recommendations. I'm sorry, Senator Johnson, do you have a motion for us?
I do. I move the LFO recommendation.
All right. Thank you so much. Any questions, comments?
I just have a statement. I'm voting no on all marijuana issues due to its status as a federally classified Class 1 controlled substance.
All right. Thank you so much. Any other comments? Are there other objections? If not, motion carries with one dissent. And Ms. Teister, anything else before we close the work session?
No, you will not be needing a carrier for this particular item because it will be put in an omnibus fee reconciliation bill that the full committee will consider.
All right, thank you so much. I'll go ahead and close the work session. I'm going to open an informational meeting. And just for those that may be listening in, I just wanted to indicate that House members have been sequestered under a call of the House since before 11 o'clock this morning. They got about 15 minutes before they got out to come to this meeting, which was scheduled late. Under our current rules, if I'm not mistaken, we don't need a full committee quorum for information meetings.
You do need a full committee quorum to begin the meeting.
Well, just did. and I would say if anybody has any pressing business since we're running late, otherwise, let's go ahead and hold this information hearing for marijuana regulatory program update. Again, Ms. Deister.
Okay. We thought that it would be a good idea, with the advice and consent of my two good co-chairs here, for OLCC to come through and give you a status update with regard to the policy bills that have been working their way through the policy committee on marijuana regulation during the 2016 session so that you could see how those are likely to impact the agency's budget. Because those policy bills have a fiscal impact, they weren't referred to Ways and Means, but we did want you to know that there is an impact on them and be aware of what that might be. So that is the purpose of this informational meeting.
Excellent. Mr. Marks, welcome back.
Thanks. We're back again. For the record, Steve Marks, Executive Director of OLCC. With me is Senior Director for Licensing, Will Higlin. We'll share this. I'll go, in the interest of time, I know it's been a long day, really quick through the communication slides there. We've done and made a commitment, the commission has to, a lot of public work. We've been around the state right after the measure passed. We've been back out doing workshops. We had 38 meetings across the summer when we were doing our rules, over 100 direct participants in the process, and established and carried off with your gracious allowance of us in the budget of $350,000, the What's Legal campaign, in that short amount of time, about 30, 40 days' time, we put that out. What you see there are some of the results of that campaign and some of the measurements we had around it. I would just add that the What's Legal campaign with it, we had a couple of goals in that. One is to inform the public about what was legal and what's not, because marijuana is still legal in only limited ways. The second was to drive people to the OLCC website at marijuana.oregon.gov. Next slide is about the amount of tremendous public interest there's been in this. And if you look at, as we've gone around the state, we had over 4,000 attendees at our workshop, the cannabis tracking system workshop. We had 14 a day with 800 attendees. That's actually teaching people who want to be licensees how to report within the reporting system. 1.6 million hits on the website, 717,000 hits on the frequently asked questions, 16,000 links to our temporary rules, business readiness guide, 11,500, and 4,000 views of the video that trains people. So, you know, we've got a tremendous amount of interest here, and we're going to continue to move forward. But we think, based on this, you know, some of the estimates we had about number of applicants are going up rather rapidly, and we'll talk
Sorry,
about
Mr.
that.
Sorry, Mr. Marks, we had a question.
This is through the state of Oregon, right? It's a .oregon.gov.
Yes.
You should be able to have a pie chart that shows for each hit where it originates. And I was wondering if you could bring us or me how many are from out of state and how many are from out of country. We get this sure. on our legislative websites, and I'd just like to see what the interest really is here, if it's from Oregonians or if it's from out of state, and if you could do that for each of those, that would be great. Thank you.
We'll do it.
All right. Thank you. Please continue.
With that,
co-chairs, member of the committee, again, I'm Will Higlin, Senior Director of Licensing and Compliance. Steve talked a lot about Transparency, a lot of information from the public getting ready for our applications. Being the operational person, I was really nervous about January 4th. If most of you know, we needed to accept applications on or before January 4th. January 4th was an interesting day in Oregon, if you don't remember, but I'm happy to report we made it. But there was a big ice storm. State offices were closed. A few of us made it to the office, turned on our computers, and I think it was at 7:17 a.m. the first application was received. So it was paid for, it showed up, and the system's been up and running. It's been really reliable since we started, so we're thrilled with that. As far as our current status with applications, you can see from the chart, we have 800, and this was as of February 11th, we had 875 total applications, and then there's a breakdown. So we had 509 of those that were complete. We had 55 that were in the system that were complete but not yet submitted via a payment, and then we have 311 in draft form. So we can't look at those numbers. We can see once they're submitted, then we can start our investigation, but people log into the system, and we can see how many people have logged in, and that represents the 311. So they're in the process right now of gathering all their information, getting ready to apply. As of this morning, you can see the growth. So from the 11th to this morning, we had 920 total in the system with 541 complete.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Have you given any thought to just how saturated the market is going to become? I mean, at some point, you continue to take licensees at different levels of license. I don't know if we're going to run out of dope smokers.
Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson. Yeah, there is some consideration in the legislation, but, you know, it's a qualifications-based system, so we will give out licenses to all that qualify. The legislation does call on us to look at canopy size and to look at market in the future, but in this initial stage, since we don't have much that we're accepting all, you know, legal applicants that meet our criteria.
Okay, thank you. Looks like I'm chairing now. Please continue.
Thank you. So the breakdown you can see for producers are leading the way at this point, which would make sense. When we did our outreach program, we encouraged people that were like in retail that our retail shops aren't scheduled to open till October. So there was no sense in rushing in their application. I think that's reflective of what you see here. So the producers are leading the way with 311. We have one laboratory, which we're thrilled with, because without the labs, we'll have a hard time getting the system up and going because all the product needs to be tested. 46 processors, 34 wholesalers, one research certificate, and you can see retail's 116. I think on Bill's original estimates, I think we're expecting 4 to 450 retail establishments when we open in October.
Okay, we'll start with Representative Whitsitt, whose hand I saw first, and then we'll go to Representative Nierman.
So these are locations. Are you keeping track of where the origin of the business is? Out of state? Out of country? Are you saying only people, you know, we just passed a bill that allows out-of-state companies or whatever you want to call them to come in, and so are you keeping track of where they're coming from? Could we see that total of, you know, are they from Colorado? Are they from Mexico? Are they from wherever? I would like to know as a legislator, who is going to own these businesses? Where the money's going to go back to after it leaves us?
Chair Johnson, Representative Whitsitt, I'm not sure that we really looked at delineating that in our initial software work, you know, that we did, residency, because we didn't have that issue until the legislature said they wanted to revisit that issue. We will be looking at the investors. We'll have some information. We'll have to look and see what we can provide the legislature and share with you out of the system and what we can produce. We will be looking at all the investors and where they're from. It's just not clear to me that we have a reported out field where we'll capture that as the investigators go through.
Follow-up, Senator Whitsitt, or Representative Whitsitt.
I would suggest that that's something that you do because, you know, we keep hearing this is all about Oregon, this is going to grow Oregon, this is big Oregon business, but if your big owners of these that are funding all the money in, they're going to take their profits back out of Oregon once they've got done growing and selling their pot here. The money's going to leave. And so I think it's really imperative that you know where these businesses are because our money's going to go out there. Thank you.
Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Mr. Marks, I noticed there's only one laboratory that's got an application out there. Do you expect that that will be a bottleneck, or do you expect more applications to come in?
We do expect more applications, and it's highly concerning to us because they control the flow of product through the system. You have to have labs in place. Now, a number of labs, I think it's in the number around 25, 27, are trying to get their certification from OHA and ORLAP. So we had one in here, but they're working through that process simultaneous with us. So they need to get through that process. We do know that, you know, there's a tremendous amount of investment in some of these labs. It's actually quite expensive for some of the equipment. So as some look to upgrade and others, we're not sure how many we're going to get through by what time frame. So we'll be a bottleneck if we don't have enough lab capacity when we begin the license, because they just won't be able to test all the product to move it from licensee to licensee throughout the system.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
All right, next slide. So if you look at the total marijuana license applications through February 8th, and then what we did is a trend line, so you can kind of see where we are. You can see the trend line of marijuana applications in the slide. We expect to hit our original projections by April of this year. Eventually, the application number growth rate will flatten out, but there are variable factors that will continue to impact the potential licensees that apply. And I wanted to point out really the major variable, and that's the opt-out provision that was put in Measure 3400. So you can see that 77 cities and 19 counties have opted out, but 45 had referred the opt-out to voters. Depending upon the outcome of the vote, we could see a spike in licensing. Cities and counties can also opt back in at any time. So that's one of the variables we'll watch very closely as we move forward.
Can I,
yes, Senator.
Are they able to opt out at any time if they so choose, but or once they're in forever? What's, I can't remember what that was.
So they can continue to opt. I mean, the jurisdictions can opt out, but they're not under the same, remember the provision about 55% and coming in, they're not under, wouldn't act under that statutory provision that allowed them to do it. So the cities and counties would still have their independent ability.
Quick
follow-up?
Yeah, let's just take Douglas County. It was out. They're going to do a referral. They come. Let's say they come in. They try it for a year. It's not working. They want to opt out. Do they have to go back to a referral, or are they unable to opt out?
They have to do a regular local referral on their local ballot, but they have the ability then to generally opt out as you would any other local election matter. Budget recap, we were given $8.3 million. We're about 25% of the way through the biennium and expended about 24% of the money. We are finalizing our hiring for IT projects. You allocated to us $2 million in the legislatively improved budget. These included projects for the online licensing system, which we've launched, and the cannabis tracking system, which is currently undergoing testing. We're going to continue to work closely with the CIO's office and LFO in developing these projects. But that was a recap, a thumbnail sketch of the budget you provided. Legislation, some of you have voted on these matters. There are now three bills in the process, 4014, House bill, and then Senate bill 1511, and a new Senate bill 1598, which will capture a lot of the amendments that weren't made in the prior bills that needed more work. I won't go through all of...
Senator Johnson, excuse me. Yes.
I don't know exactly how to phrase this question, so bear with me. These are all bills that are under the aegis of the Joint Committee. Are there any self-starters that are operating in a parallel universe to the work of the Joint Committee?
Legislation-related, but otherwise, REPREED, I believe, had a banking-related legislation that was outside of the committee.
Can comment on that whenever you like. Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, Madam Co-Chair, House Bill 4094 passed the House 56-3.
It's been referred to the Senate Revenue Committee, where I think it will have a hearing soon. And it basically does two quick things. Removes from state criminal liability the provision of banking services to legal cannabis businesses, and directs the Department of Consumer and Business Services to conduct a comprehensive study on what options are available to the state to help deal with the problem of duffel bags of cash.
Thank you, Representative Reed.
And I might just comment on our comments on that.
Please.
While we're not taking a general position, what we have to offer that issue is with the cannabis tracking system and revenue system that they'll develop, we can actually provide banks much of the information that they would require for compliance. So if that's allowed to share that information, there's some provisions in these bills and that bill that would facilitate.
Mr. Marks, I'm struggling to hear you.
Okay. We have our information in our cannabis tracking system, right? And the Department of Revenue is going to do the point-of-sale tax collections. We'll also have information that if we share it with banks, that will help them meet their regulatory compliance. So this will show information that the product and that licensee, that business, was in the legal system, their product was produced in the legal system, and therefore they may have more bankable businesses than you have today.
Follow up?
This is probably a question to Representative Reed, if the chair will allow it. Is it possible to, through state legislation, to get rid of the federal preemption?
Madam Chair, only one of us is a lawyer, and I think you know the answer to that. But the reason that I think it's important is that for some state chartered institutions, it's helpful. It also doesn't make a lot of sense for me, or at least to me, to say we have this set of businesses that are legal by state statute, but it's illegal to provide banking services to those businesses. What has happened, and there are others in the room, obviously, who know lots more about this than me, the Justice Department has issued what's called the Cole Memo, and FinCEN has this other guidance, which basically says if you do all these things, we probably won't come after you. This is intended to make it easier to do all these things.
Okay. Thank you.
House Bill 4014 was the base bill. It was the legislation that dealt with the residency requirement. And I'll just jump to some of the larger new change was the micro canopy tier it provides. So we'll have to establish additional fees that will change our estimates with the passage of that legislation should it move its way through the process. And associated with that, we have two regulatory specialists and half a position for an administrative specialist. And then also associated with that legislation is our request for $50,000 to leverage the What's Legal campaign should a proposal to advance a juvenile prevention effort move forward. This would tie that together and help leverage all what you saw in terms of the communication resource that we built with our website and others, help make those linkages between whatever's done there and whatever we can do.
Senator Johnson.
I just can't let the opportunity pass without once again making a plea to see all of this stuff in one place, basically a ledger on the expenditure side of the ledger as well as the revenue side. Is all we know about is anecdotally a Christmas bag full of $80,000 in cash and then about a bazillion requests for 50 here, 350 there, this many more FTE. I know LFO is working on it and that somebody in LFO drew the short straw to do this work, and I just yearn to see that in its totality so that we can get some sense of what we are expending versus what we're taking in revenue. And that's not meant as a criticism, Ms. Dyster. It's just meant as a fervent prayer that you manage to live through the accumulation of the data.
And then I'm going to jump to Senate Bill 1511. This is the expanded access model. This would allow actually the OLCC's recreational system between our licensees to actually produce and sell medical grade marijuana at our recreational retail establishments. So that's an important new concept. It's different. We had, and our commission was very clear very early on that we would not take any marijuana in our system, or that was our preference not to have anything that was not tracked through the cannabis tracking system. All of this will be tracked to the cannabis tracking system and through that. So this is a big difference in terms of Oregon's medical market. I'm sure you'll hear from medical patients and others that have participated in Oregon's traditional medical system about their concerns about this. One of the concerns that generated this legislation was the idea that medical product would not be produced and medical producers would jump into the recreational system, leaving some patients wanting for their medical growers and product. It also contains the provisions for tax-free medical marijuana in our recreational dispensaries. And with this, we have one regulatory specialist additional associated with this and another half of an administrator. We also are, because of a number of law changes, want to roll out again before retail opens sometime between October 1st and the end of the year, another iteration of the What's Legal campaign, and update that because things will change. And then our timeline going forward, so you can see where we're at today. The legislative session will be licensing growers and labs, and then everyone as quickly as we can. We have to get our rule adopted, our final permanent rule will be adopted in June. We will hold public hearings on that rule before that. So that would be June 28th, and then in the fall, about October 1, I think, is the target for retail recreational opening in Oregon. But we are dependent in part on revenues, point of collection system for that actual launch. So we keep some fungibility there, but sometime between October 1st and the end of the year. And I think that concludes our report.
Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions? Yes, Representative Nierman.
President Nierman. So if I go back a couple of slides, so on that bill right there, 1511 there, so if we pass this bill, that means all medical marijuana will be under the seed-to-sale program, and if we don't pass this, then medical marijuana is not under the seed-to-sale program. Is that true?
No, that's not true, Representative Nierman. The medical program will still exist, but what we've done is provided ways for our side to grow and provide product to patients from the licensed recreational side, so long as they come over and are tracked. We also are working with that micro canopy tier, and the other bill is really sort of this developed incentive to say, come under the system, have access to both markets, and we're going to try to ensure that patients that you've had an affinity with for a long time are still able to get their product from you. But when you walk over to the OLCC side of the line, you're going to be tracked. And you know, there are provisions where we're going to look at, and we had to look at this anyway for Southern Oregon, about how we're going to do the tracking, what are the requirements that are different for some areas, because we have some security requirements that aren't practical in a rural location. We have a waiver process. They're going to have strict and clear provisions to hold to the intent of our security requirements, even if they ask for a waiver. So we will hold them accountable to their intention if we waive those requirements on their behalf.
Can I follow?
Please.
So if I'm a medical grower, then I'm not under seed to sale at all. Then, is there do you have any enforcement authority over that medical program? So if I'm a medical grower and I'm selling recreationally or something like that, not legally, do you have enforcement authority over that?
The OLCC has no enforcement authority over OHA's processes or medical dispensaries. Okay. We only have enforcement authority, really, over our own licensees within the system. So,
follow up.
Who does have, so if I'm just selling pot that's not tracked and not licensed and I'm just doing that, who does have enforcement over that? That'd be the state police or?
Yeah. Co-Chair Gomberg, Representative Nierman. Yeah, state police, local law enforcement.
Thank you.
City and law enforcement.
Okay. Further questions?
I just want to say, and we all know that Josephine County has virtually no law enforcement. So just as a by there, which is one of the largest that you have for applied for growing counties, they won't be able to tell what in the heck's being grown there because they barely have law enforcement.
Yeah. If I may, please. Chair Gomberg, Representative Nierman, I just want to go back to one thing I missed. The bill from last session required OHA to do some level of tracking within their system and establish some license types and processing for the product and testing for the product. So there is going to be sort of a monthly reporting system. It's not concurrent like ours and daily.
Are there any other questions? Well, if not, thank you so much for the update, gentlemen. Ms. Dice, do you have anything else for us?
I would just add that I think I am mere hours away from trying to get a draft of expenditures on one page, and so I'm hoping to be able to finalize that because I anticipate that that question will be asked in the full committee at some point. So, you know, we've been asked to do that, and we are definitely working on it.
All right, very good. Colleagues, I'm going to close the informational hearing. I will remind you that we'll be gathering again on Tuesday. We'll have a long day. Wear comfortable shoes, and the co-chairs will bring pizza. And with that, we are adjourned. And